This is Panel by Panel, a show designed specifically to help you make sense of the decades of continuity surrounding your favorite comics events. Hosted by Uncle George Doro, who picked up his first comic book from the spinning rack at a corner convenience store, and Epic Boss McFall, who gets his comics online and binges via graphic novel and trade paperback. This week, it's part one of the Marvel Comics event Fear Itself. And as always, beware, because here, there be spoilers.
So welcome to Panel by Panel. I am Charles McFall. With me, as I hope to be always, you know, the only person I'd like to do this show with, Uncle George Doro.
How's it going?
Yeah. So we left off with War of Kings, and that was a big two-part episode. Now, here's the idea behind Panel by Panel. George, and I'd like to hear your take on how you describe this to people as well. Panel by panel, we take completed story arcs. We try to get something that's already been finished that really shook the foundations or changed the way that comics were made in the Marvel Universe. And it's the Marvel Universe because they make it easy with Marvel Unlimited. If DC had a DC Unlimited that I could pay a one-year subscription fee and read on my tablet easily as Marvel does, then it'd be all comics, you know, that are DC and Marvel. So that's not all. But anyway, George, how do you describe the show to people?
We take Marvel story arcs from the recent past and the distant past, and we hash them out, essentially. Talk about the pros and cons, and if we were able to read them as they came out, we talk about our reactions then. If this is the first time we're touching on them, then we're talking about how we assess the stories now.
Exactly. So it's all about the experience and why you might be interested in doing it. Now, some of these arcs, much like Fear Itself, man, it gets so deep with all the crossovers, the spread, the sprawl of the story, if you will. And I tend to like that. So every time George and I pick one, he goes, okay, let's do the core. Let's do the core. And so I do that, and then I go back and start trying to fill in all the extraneous pieces. Fear Itself, I want to say there's 50-plus books to read, and I don't know what it was about this, George, but as I started reading the sprawl, I wasn't into it. I was like, I'm just going to stick to the core on this. How'd you find it?
Well, I read the main series, Fear Itself 1-7, and then I also picked up a trade paperback since Dracula fan that included about 5 or 6 issues of Hulk featuring Red Hulk, and then the 3-part Hulk Dracula crossover from Fear Itself. And I'm with you. I thought the main series was very well done. The peripheral stuff, at least in that trade paperback, not so much.
It was a little hard to follow. Let's get into it. Let's just jump into it. Now, was this the first time you tackled Fear Itself?
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of what the storyline was, really.
All right, me either.
Yeah.
Me either. You know, it's this big comic book thing, and we both play Marvel Avengers Alliance. They're actually doing the story in season 2 of that game, and everybody's going crazy about it, right? I'm like, well, maybe I should read it, because I've never heard of this before. I know I'm outing myself as a filthy casual, I guess, if it comes to deep continuity in the Marvel Universe. But this was my first time as well. Now, this is fairly new still anyway. April to October of 2011 is when this ran by Marvel Comics. And was the game your first exposure to it as well, or had you kind of heard of it before?
No, I was actually in comic book stores at the time that parts of it were being released. So I was aware of it at least that much. I just don't buy as many physical comics as I used to. So I was instantly overwhelmed by how many titles I saw on the shelves that had the Fear Itself logo on it. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll pick this up in a trade paperback at some later date or read it somehow. But at that point, I thought it wasn't going to grab me enough to get out of my not buying comics phase.
Honestly, between 2000 and 2012, more or less, I was out of the comic book world, other than surface stuff, games, TV. You're being aware of certain things, like I was aware of Civil War, which we'll tackle coming up in a later episode. I was aware of, not Secret Wars, it's the Skrull, Secret Invasion, thank you. I was aware of Secret Invasion. I just wasn't reading them at the time. Since 2012, I visited my local library and got the trade paperbacks there, which, let's explain what a trade paperback is for those who don't know.
Certainly. Essentially, it's a big book that reprints a set of stories or a variety of comics from either a particular series or other stories that have something in common.
story arcs, basically, right? Or collections,
yeah,
as it were.
For instance, one thing I have is The Greatest Joker Stories Ever Told, which has Joker stories from the time he was introduced in the 40s till the book was published in the early 90s, I think. So it can either be a story arc or just something where there's a common theme in all the stories.
Nice. Now, the difference between that and a graphic novel is a single story that would be considered a single book, but it's just 3 to 4 times larger than a comic, right?
Give or take, yeah.
Think novel like you read, they just illustrated it versus having 6 or 7 books that they put out over months.
Yeah, pretty much it's any book that tells story in comic form that has a beginning and an end.
Okay. See, I like how you put that. That's nice. It sounds like you practiced at home in front of your mirror.
To your hairbrush. I've had to explain it to people who don't read comics often enough that I have these things pretty much memorized.
Well, I'm glad because, you know, it comes in and helps me out quite a bit when you do that. Now, trade paperback is one of my favorite ways of consuming comics until Marvel Unlimited came along. And honestly, I treat Marvel Unlimited like a trade paperback. The way we did Fear Itself, I go to Browse, I think it is, and at the top then it has different selections. I select event or comic event, something like that. And then it has all these stories.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So I treat it that way.
And that's how I tackled Fear Itself, too.
Now, there's so much more to it. And I wish they were sponsors. Maybe this is how we get them to sponsor. It's just like, hey, we love it so much. Because honestly, that would be one of the things I'd pimp all the time, you know, paid or not. And actually, we do. We talk about it here because that is George and I's preferred way of consuming. I mean, if you were to try to track down Fear Itself today, you're going to Barnes & Nobles or some other Amazon.com, some other big bookstore, and shelling out $40 to $60, mm-hmm. right, for one of these.
Yeah.
For $60, I got the app for the year. And we've dug through, this is episode number 6, I think, so we've dug through 4 or 5 stories because we had some two-parters easily. And on top of that, I don't know about you, George, but I'm also reading other stories while I'm working on the show itself, too.
I try to fit a few extra ones in, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's really cool. So Fear Itself was done in 2011. Like I said, the writers are Matt Fraction for the miniseries and Ed Brubaker for prologue. And here's where it gets a little weird for me. I know we always talk about artists. I hear people talk about artists, but there's 3 different levels of artists. I don't know who's important, who's not. But you got pencilers, inkers, and colorists. And I know for the book, they're all important, but they don't always make a name for themselves. But the pencilers are Stuart Immonen in the miniseries, Steve McNiven in the miniseries covers, and Scott Eaton for the prologue. Inker is Wade Von Grobadger, and the colorist was Laura Martin throughout the whole thing. And that's the team that put this together. So overall, before we dive into the story, you started to say something here, and then I will ask you a question. What were we saying?
I think Stuart Immonen is the prime artist we'll be concerned with, since he did the main art of the 7-issue series.
I'll be truthful. I mean, I recognize some names. Like we did a show with Walt Simonson. I'd heard his name before. I've heard others' names. I just don't always know exactly who they are. I'm getting better about that. Now, I know one of my favorite artists out there has had some controversy lately. Brian K. Vaughan is one of my favorite artists. I don't know if he's an author or artist.
He's an author.
But I like him. He's a writer. Okay, yes. So I do dig his stuff, even though he came out quite sexist lately. What was your overall impression of the story and how it played out?
Overall, I found it very enjoyable. Yeah. I think it was well done. I enjoyed Matt Fraction's writing, and I really loved the art. Stuart Immonen does the kind of art I like to see in Bang superhero comics like this. It's very clean, you know, very sharp and delineated. There's not a lot of sketchiness, which works for something like a horror comic, but doesn't work for me in a superhero comic. So I was really pleased with the art. I really slowed down my reading because I wanted to take in each panel and just savor the visuals of the story. And overall, plot-wise, I enjoyed it. The first 4 or 5 issues, in retrospect, didn't seem like a whole lot happened. And then they shoved the climax into 2 fast issues. The pacing was a little off for me.
So according to this here, now we do have the Wikipedia entries up to help refresh our memories as we go through, or to pull out certain things that you don't get by reading the book, as in this fact. This was, Fear Itself was the first company-wide crossover event since 2008 Secret Invasion. So it had been almost 2.5-3 years since the company-wide book crossover happened. So it sounds like possibly, if you're talking about the back end, that they didn't quite know how to handle it yet, didn't quite manage it correctly. I felt like later events like Civil War ran much smoother. War of Kings, holy crap. I mean, that was one of those I just could not get enough of. And there were a ton of books to read with that. And it was handled very smoothly across the board. Could have been miscommunication. I mean, you could have had anything here with what caused that. But I was going to say that as well. Overall, I felt like it's a little slow pace, and all of a sudden it's over. And it's like, what just happened? And with events like this, I do feel a little left out of the loop, because Asgard is on Earth now. You know, Asgard somehow, I'm sure, is a big storyline for Thor, but Asgard had some battle, had cracked in half or something, and fell to Earth one way or the other. And now they're in Broxton, Oklahoma. Broxton.
Correct.
You know, it's like if you don't watch your favorite TV show for a couple of years and then you tune back in one night and you're like, what the hell's happening here? I don't understand. Do you have any back end on that, or were you left in the dark as well?
I have a little more than you do, because I do recall there was a coworker of mine who was very much into comics. So whenever he went to his comic store, he would bring some in. And then during the overnights that I worked or on the weekends, I was able to go through the stack that he lent me. So I was able to catch up with a lot of stuff. And one of those was the end of the long-running original Mighty Thor series, which ended with Ragnarok, where all the gods die and Asgard is lost. And then a couple of years later, they restarted Thor, and somehow Asgard was recreated in the Midwest or Oklahoma.
Well, it acted like it. I mean, everything kind of sounded like his devastation there. Like it was something crash landed, something, and they were going to.
That was a result of a crossover called Siege, where after Secret Invasion, Norman Osborn took over S.H.I.E.L.D., as I recall, and he manipulated the Dark Avengers, and Loki manipulated events as well. In an effort to destroy Asgard, and Loki was successful in that. And then that's where we have the beginning of Fear Itself, with Asgard in ruins in the middle of Oklahoma.
Now, see, another string that plays into that you see kind of play out through Fear Itself, is Loki dies at some point in that story before Fear Itself and is reborn a child.
Right.
And basically has a whole new chance on life. Like, I read some of it in another book, but essentially he puts his old personality into the Eichel, you know, the Loki backwards crow, Eichel. So the evil Loki's always advising him, but he's choosing his path. And this Loki plays into this story a little bit, not nearly as much, but possibly the previous version of Loki had really set this story up to take off. And I know with a Thor lore, even though this is a crossover, this still seems like a very strong Thor story, right? This is a very Asgardian-centric story.
Yeah, if there's one primary hero in this story, it's Thor. And I was not aware of the backstory for Loki. I just saw that. And I know that he had been a female Loki during the new Thor series that I started reading. Now, all of a sudden, he's a young boy, I guess. Yeah. It did strike me as odd that he was speaking in a more modern, earthly vernacular than the Victorian speech that the rest of the Asgardians use.
They have so much fun with that character. So, I didn't read the exact details on how he died, what happened. Somehow, he was reborn as a baby or as a young kid. I'm not sure exactly how he came out there. But the story where I picked up on, he doesn't know about his past. Young Loki doesn't. And he's acting like a child of the new millennium. Everybody's kind of annoyed with him. And, of course, Thor has him under his protection, which means the Warriors 3 have him under his protection. Because whatever he did, which might all be these stories tied in together, whatever he did, the Asgardians hate him.
And they want him dead. And of course, being a young boy, he's very susceptible to that because he's still developing magic. He's still figuring out his path. And through whatever story I was reading there, he ends up discovering something he hid for himself. So basically, the old Loki knew to hide his mental state, knew to hide his spirit. I'm not exactly sure how they played it out, but he knew he's going to die. So he essentially hid himself in some old magic and left clues for his new younger self to find, but the new younger self betrayed himself. He's like, nope, you know, I kind of like where I am now, but I'll keep you around. And so that's kind of where all that played in. So that's why he's here now. I can't remember his fear itself, but I know one of the things they do is Loki gets a cell phone, right, from Tony Stark. And then he, with magic or whatever, he tweaks it so that he can keep track of everything as Guardian throughout the realms and all the Earth stuff. And they make constant jokes as if Loki's that teenager. And it's a very fun play because Thor is still Thor.
Right.
And Thor's still ye and yay. And, you know, what is this? Why are you messing with the human contraptions? And Loki's like, ah, I just posted that. Shut up. It's very fun. And I was disappointed in Fear Itself knowing that. Knowing what I had seen in other paths along the same storyline, I was a little disappointed they didn't bring Loki more into Fear Itself, even as a side player helping Thor or helping Asgard, because Thor goes through some bumps here we're going to talk about here in a second. So, yes, okay, so we're establishing they're on Earth, things are going sideways, and in the lore of Thor, the legend has always been he is going to fight the serpent and he's going to die killing the serpent. Yeah, I've seen that come up in many of the Thor legends, right?
Yes.
And they're never really clear on the serpent. I know one of the animated series actually had a Fing Fang Foom type dragon that he had to fight that Loki had unleashed. This particular one, all of a sudden, well, maybe not all of a sudden, but for me it's all of a sudden because I'm not aware of it. All of a sudden, Odin has a brother who they call the serpent. And were you aware of any family of Odin?
No, I wasn't. And I believe this is the first appearance of that character in the Marvel Universe. And I do not know Norse mythology to the degree that I know Greek mythology. So if that is something that came from Norse mythology, I was unaware of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's in the mythology, I mean, Thor always has to fight the serpent. I mean, it's very, all mythologies seem to kind of come from a lot of the same base. You know, Christian mythology, Satan's the serpent, blah, blah, blah. But in the comics, they picked up on certain things. But I'd never heard of Odin's brother either. And so this was interesting. And Sin, okay? So I'm still not tracking. And it's because I was out of the loop. I understand that. It's not because of confusing writing. It's because I was out of the loop. But I'm not tracking how the Red Skull had a kid who's the spitting image of her father. You know, what made the Red Skull look the way he did? You know, I thought it was some Joker-esque type accident, but I don't
not
know.
Aware of the backstory. I mean, I was aware of Sin as a Captain America villain introduced by, I believe, Mark Gruenwald in the late 80s, early 90s as the daughter of the Red Skull. And so I thought, okay, I'll buy into that, sure. Sure. So she's been around a while, and so I missed the part where she was disfigured to the point where she now looks like the Red Skull. And I guess she's actually right. Referred to as the Red Skull here and there.
Right, because she's basically the new Red mm-hmm. Skull. So I'm trying to scan the wiki to see if it gives any background. I do know, and we're setting this up, and then the next episode we'll really tackle issues 1-7, detailed, panel by panel, as it were. So here's the arc of what's going on, and then we'll tackle that. So here's what's happening is Odin is the good god, at least in the olden times. The Earth and other, presumably other planets, would pray to the gods and worship the gods, and that made them strong. However, Odin's brother, who's only, I only remember him as a serpent from the book. I don't know if they actually gave him a name.
His name is Kull Borson.
Kull, C-U-L, Kull.
Yeah, yeah. Odin is also the son of Bor, so and the Kull is the son of
Bor. Gotcha.
Borson is where that comes from.
I love how easy these things are. What is daughter Kull? Would it be Kull daughter?
I figure since Björk, the singer, her last name is Goodman's daughter, that it'd be a similar kind of thing.
Okay. Maybe our Finlandish people can help us out, who is very close to where all this came from. So Kull is the opposite god. He needs fear. He needs doubt. He needs anger. He needs all the negativity. Yes. to be strong. And setting up a standard dark versus light, you know, evil versus good kind of thing, except Odin isn't all that good, really, is he?
Well, his interest is Asgard. Midgard, or Earth, more or less a resource for him, you know, for the gods to be worshipped so that they have power.
Right.
And in return, they were guardians of the Earth. But when Kolbjörnsson reared his head, then Odin decided that the only way to defeat him was to torch the Earth.
Yeah.
So going from a beneficent god to a god that pretty much is doing what he has to for Asgard to survive.
And you kind of see his point. Yes. But I guess he's a good god. He's a horrible father. Because he's not explaining any of this to his people. He just is very cryptic, and it's very interesting. We're going to dive into the stories here in just a second. I'm trying to think if there's any other overall thing to this. Now, okay, I will say this. As far as all the tie-in stories went, I was scanning the wiki a little bit about how the stories work together. And it's different than, say, Civil War, which I keep referencing that because that's the one we're working on also right now. Civil War, everything's almost chronologic, right? Everything, even if it doesn't directly tie into the main story, it's, you know, easily that it's going on with the same story, and they interweave. It's a very easy thing to follow as far as how everything's going versus this. The core miniseries had 7 issues, like George said, but each breakoff issue, you know, the Fantastic Four basically had their own Fear Itself storyline that didn't necessarily weave into this one. And everybody involved, like you talked about the Red Hulk and crossover with Dracula and different things like that, while they definitely touched on, I mean, you could tell they were in the world at the same time, it didn't weave together, which is very interesting to me because my experience with Marvel has been, with these storylines, just a seamless fitting together of all these separate stories into one bigger picture that you can really just drink in. And in fact, Secret Invasion was like that, where it just fit together so well that you got this big picture, like watching a movie. You know, it's like watching the Avengers, and over here, Team A with Hulk and Iron Man are doing this, and Team B, Captain America and the Twins, are down here in Tokyo or wherever, saving the train. So it's like watching all these little stories, but they go together so well. You know what's happening. You can track it. Fear Itself felt disjointed when you got into the other parts of it. Is that kind of how you saw it? Or?
Well, I think that you're citing two exceptions to the rule in Civil War and Secret Invasion, because I have found that this is pretty much the norm for these company-wide events. A really good example is World War Hulk.
Oh, yeah, we're going to tackle that one soon.
I remember, again, my coworker lending me different series that were tied into that. And I was reading them going, how does this all fit together? Characters are jumping from one story to another with no real logic, and I'm not sure what order I'm reading these in. And it was quite confusing. So I just decided to primarily focus on the backbone series of that event. And I found that a lot of these crossovers have that problem. And that, you know, that's a hard thing for the company to tackle, because what you have is dozens of writers, dozens of artists, and they have their conference where they give everybody their assignments and kind of lay out the series of events that they need to go through. But then when they go off to do their stories, then they introduce inconsistencies in it. And of course, since you've got monthly schedules that vary, so you got one coming out one week and the story that may have happened before that coming out the next week, it's really hard to get that all coordinated. There's a time when more becomes less, and I think this is a good example of it. And I did have that same reaction with the Red Hulk's story arc that I read that was supposed to tie into it, because I think there were like 5 or 6 issues in that story arc. The first one tied directly into Fear Itself, but then it went off on a tangent that really had nothing to do with the event. So I was reading going, okay, when do we get back to Fear Itself? And with the Red Hulk, that never happened. So I got to the second section of the book, which was the Green Hulk versus Dracula story, which was itself a 3-issue miniseries parallel event. And that did directly get launched from an event that takes place in, I think, Fear Itself 5, 4 or 5. So that one at least did make sense as far as the rest of the event series.
Okay. I'm not intentionally citing the exceptions. That happened to be my entry into the major story arcs as I read Secret Invasion, and then I found Civil War and read that. So I was like, oh, leave it to me to come in backwards to the Marvel Universe. I'm like, hey, here's the best stuff ever. Why is this not working? I don't understand.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be going through the same kind of thing because, you know, when I read Civil War, I thought, oh, I need to go back and look some of those things that led into this. So I want to eventually read Avengers Disassembled. And then, you know, before that was another story arc that escapes my memory at the moment. But it's that kind of thing where I'm skipping back and forth in the history. And House of M is another one I want to read.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that was really
good. And so, you know, I wanted to see how the current Marvel Universe was shaped through all these event series.
Yeah, House of M definitely plays into the beginnings of Civil mm-hmm. War. And that you don't even pick up on that unless you read the sprawl, right, as it were. What does Sweden call the verse? You know, some call it Universe, and Firefly they call it the verse. I think that's what we should call the rest of the stories that tie into a major arc, the verse.
Okay.
You have to read the verse to really get it. Of course, then we turn comics into a religion, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. So I think we're at that point where we'll stop here because I think we're ready to dive into the characters and the actual book-by-book stories and Fear Itself and give you the breakdown of what happened there. So, you know, it kind of worked out. You got the general overall idea of it. Let me give you my rating. Out of 10, I'd say it's about 6.5 to 7. It's an important story. It was a good story. It felt a little rushed, and it left me with more questions than it answered, but I very much enjoyed it. What was your rating, George?
I'm going to go by my grade school rating. I'm going to give it a solid B. I thought the art was excellent. I thought that Matt Faction's writing was very good. I did have concerns with the pacing of the plot.
So there you go. Now, the next episode will be spoilerific because we'll be getting into details. So we are a proud part of the Giant-Sized Team-Up Network, and that has been a great thing going on here. We have an email now through that. That is pxp@giantsizeteamup.com. You can email us there. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Stay tuned, or actually come back to the next podcast to get your details on what happened in Fear Itself.